Hey, welcome to the Fanboy Strike Back Weekly Review Podcast, episode 40.
Hey, welcome to the Fanboy Strike Back Weekly Review Podcast, episode 40. I'm David.
I'm Eric.
And we are the Fanboys of Strike Back. Every week, we read the comics that come out. One of us will pick what we thought was the best book of the week, and we'll write a review of that book on our site, fanboystrikeback.com. And then we'll come here to the podcast, and we'll talk about some choice books of that week, including the best book. We're going to talk about everything in these books. There are going to be spoilers, so if you don't want to be spoiled, you know, come back later. And we're going to dip into some other stuff this week. We're going to talk about a little comic news. One of our listeners, Tim, sent us a trailer for the new Wolverine and the X-Men cartoon, so we're going to talk about that. But this is a primarily comic podcast, and Eric, you had to pick for the book of this week, so what'd you pick?
All right, well, of course, anyone who listens to this podcast knows I'm a huge Batman fan. Had to go with Batman 676, which is the kickoff chapter for the Rest in Peace storyline. I'm not swinging for the fences on this one, but I really enjoyed this, and I'll give you a few reasons why. First of all, and I said this in my written reviews, in this issue, with the culmination of several things that have happened within the last few years of Batman, namely the introduction of Jezebel Jett, and consequently her knowledge to Bruce Wayne as Batman, the adoption of Tim Drake as Bruce's son, and also, even to a lesser extent, the introduction of Damian as an actual, the real son of Bruce, it gives a feel like Bruce finally has what he wants. He's got a family, he's got someone who cares about him who can also deal with him being Batman, which is a very rare thing in any of Batman books in the history of Batman. Usually it's if the girl finds out she's gone and she knows how to keep a secret or something happens to her, which I'm not saying that won't happen to Jezebel Jett, it's of course setting things up, you know, Bruce is happy now, only so we can take that away from him, which you can never really have a Bruce Wayne happy for too long. It got me excited. I haven't really been too thrilled about the idea of the Rest in Peace storyline so far. Morrison's arc has been confusing at times, but this seemed to put it into a cohesive bundle for me, to where it's like, okay, all the threads have come together, and now from here we move forward, and I really enjoy that. Also, Tony Daniels' art is just awesome. Like, this guy, it's somewhere between Neil Adams and Jim Lee, and I'm going to say it's more on the Neil Adams side, but it's like contemporary classic, which is it's a mix, and it works very, very well for this book. And I have no problem with any of the character models. They all look really fantastic, and they actually look individualistic. So, and I say that with the hint of the first page being 6 months from now, Robin in that picture does not look like Tim Drake, who appears later in the book. He looks much younger, thinking that maybe that might be Damian in the Robin costume. So something might happen. Okay. Also, the Joker scene at the end was well worth the admission price alone. It was everything a Joker scene should be. It was terrifying. It was creepy. It got me excited. That's exactly what the Joker should be like. So, I know you're going to have some points to contest with me on this. So,
I don't have any points to contest per se. I'm just like, I picked this issue up. I've never been a Batman fan. And we've kind of discussed it, because it's like, I don't know if they're actually going to kill him. Which, like, when Superman died, you knew that Superman was going to die, so that's why, like, you read the story. And so I would be so much more excited if I knew, like, if they said, after Batman, rest in peace, Bruce Wayne will not be Batman, I'd be totally excited about reading it, but we don't know what's going to happen. I don't have the most faith when it comes to Grant Morrison, especially when it comes to some of the endings to his stories. So, I mean, I'm not going to pick any of these issues up after this one. I didn't think it was bad at all. I'm just not a Batman fan.
Yeah, it's just not, it's like how I feel about Fantastic Four.
Give me the backstory on this Jezebel chick. What happened? Because this is the first time I've seen her.
At the beginning of Morrison's arc, and she was kind of at first she seemed like she was just another debutante that Bruce was dating, and then it kind of turned out that she's kind of an activist as well, and she puts her money towards good things just like Bruce does. And in one issue not too long ago, she actually got after Bruce because she was saying, you know, you should do something better with your life than just being, you know, the playboy and stuff like that. And that led into her actually later discovering that he was Batman. And I think that made her even more in love with Bruce Wayne, because she knows that he's more than just the facade that he puts forth. And right. And she accepts him. And so I think that's a really big factor. I can understand your points of view. I think that it's exactly... I don't think he's going to die. But I think this is going to be, much like the Superman story afterwards, I think this is going to be a world without Batman for a while, or at least for a little while until someone replaces him or comes back.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I might pick up a couple of issues here and there, but I don't really plan on it. It doesn't do anything for me.
That's fair.
If you are a Batman fan, I could understand how you would be excited about this. You know, like I said again, the issue wasn't bad. It just wasn't for me.
Yeah, okay.
Secret Invasion Fantastic Four, number 1 of 3, came out this week. And this is a tie-in to Secret Invasion. And it was actually good. Some tie-ins seem to suck. This one was actually pretty well done. It takes place right before the very first issue of Secret Invasion, and kind of during the first issue. And basically we find out that Sue Storm is not a Skrull. We see that Sue Storm was at some kind of convention somewhere, and the Skrulls capture her. And at that point, one of the other Skrulls impersonates her, goes to the Baxter Building, and then that's what we see what happens in Secret Invasion number 1, where a Skrull who is Sue, you know, turns against the Fantastic Four and takes half of the Baxter Building into the Negative Zone.
So this isn't the actual title. This is a miniseries?
Yeah, this is a miniseries. 1 out of 3. I think what Marvel's trying to do is, especially with Fantastic Four, since right now Miller and Hitch are doing the book, so that the book has nothing to do with Secret Invasion. And so I guess they're just trying to throw in this tie-in to have something in continuity, which is a good idea, because it's kind of the best of both worlds, because we still get to see the good story that Hitch and Miller are doing, but we also get to see what's going on with the Fantastic Four outside of the Secret Invasion books.
Mm-hmm.
But this book had a really good ending, because you find out that the Skrull that was impersonating Sue was actually a Skrull named Lijah, and Lijah was once upon a time in love and was a couple with Johnny Storm. And I was pretty happy to see that, because I knew that, well, I was hoping that if there was going to be the Secret Invasion and the Skrulls are going to be coming back, obviously it's going to affect the Fantastic Four in a big way. And I was wondering this, I was, you know, hoping to see that Lijah was going to make an appearance, because if you're talking about the Skrulls taking over Earth, you can't really ignore the fact that Johnny Storm used to basically date a Skrull.
Right.
So at the very end, you find out that it's her, and he's pretty shocked, and that's how it ends. But it was good. Like I said, you know, some tie-ins are just forced, but this one had a nice story. It's going to be interesting to see what happens to Sue. And again, I mean, we still don't know what's going on with Reed, because at the end of Secret Invasion number 1, he was looking pretty messed up. So it was good. Good.
Okay. Moving on to my heartbreak of the week, Titans number 2. And I talked about this, about how excited I was for the title to come out, and I'm a big Titans fan, and this is my favorite cast of characters, and really, they should almost write themselves. They have such a history and such a camaraderie with each other, and really, the writing of this book is not bad.
No, it's not. It's really not.
I have no problem with Judd Winnick's story. I enjoy the aspect of Trigon returning because it's a very, you know, when you put a classic team like this together, it's fun to see them with a classic villain. And other than Deathstroke, Trigon was kind of the big villain for them when they were the new Teen Titans, Raven's father. There's just a lot of connection there. The artist, though, Benitez, just awful. Like, I would take Ian Churchill back in a heartbeat. And the sad thing is, I think this guy's going to be drawing the book for a while.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. I looked on the upcoming months, and his name was on the book. The
characters, that's not good.
Oh, the characters just look horribly off. I don't know if, like, he's just trying too hard on, like, the character models. There's something wrong about it. And some of them, like, he tries to draw like Churchill. Like, he just tries to draw him sexy, and it comes off really odd. There's this one scene where Argent is, like, leaning back trying to exclaim, "Who's trying to kill us?" And if you look at her, like, her waist is nothing. It's just ridiculous. Like, there's just... I'm rambling because it just makes me angry.
Yeah.
Like, it's just offensive. And you think for, like, a book like this where they're trying to promote it, it's a big team thing, get an established artist who people are going to enjoy or something. You know,
this kind of goes to what we were talking about, though. It just seems like this book wasn't... It seems like this book isn't a big deal. Like, it's like the Titans getting back together. It doesn't seem like they're really marketing it. They're not, like, having any press for it. It just seems like this book is doomed to fail.
Yeah, and I agree. And you think, like... I know there's a lot of big summer events, and I know DC's trying to focus on that. And I'm trying not to be one of those people that we saw at that panel last weekend, but...
Right.
It's just, you know, for something like this, it's just, you know, it doesn't have to be an event to have the support behind it, or it shouldn't be. Like, just the regular team books or character books, you know, you don't have to, you know, promote them or, you know, promote the hell out of them or have an event or have someone die or something like that. It's just, like, just focus on the main books, on making them good and presentable. And that's all you really have to do. And they'll settle. You know, I think DC's just caught up way too much in, like, we have to make everything an event. And that is directly shown with the past several years of their publishing schedule.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, ever since, gosh, before Infinite Crisis, I guess ever since Identity Crisis, everything has been a big, big event.
Yeah, I mean, even the smaller events, kind of, they build as big events. Like, and some work out, like Sinestro Corps. And some don't, like Amazon's Attack. But there's always some kind of event going on.
That's true. Well, I mean, like we said, the writing's bad, or not bad, the story is good. We're going to keep buying it, so we can only hope. But, like, it just seems like this book is, like, not going to stay around. Like, there's no chance.
Yeah, we'll see. They might learn their lesson in 6 issues, change the artist, but I don't know.
Right. How about Green Lantern Corps number 24?
Might have had the gross out scene for me of the week.
Yeah, this was, gave me the heebie-jeebies a little bit.
First of all, I love this book. I love it.
It wasn't amazing that we are in love with a Corps book?
I know.
It's just absurd.
If you would have told us, like, 2 years ago, we would never believed it, but, this book just gives so much more insight into the actual... Like, if you want to read Green Lantern and not have it be dominated by Hal Jordan, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but it's nice to be able to see the other characters. Like, you and I both love Guy Gardner and Kyle Rayner, and to have them spotlighted in a book like this, like, that's perfect.
That's the best of both worlds.
Absolutely, yeah, it's absolutely wonderful. And here, like, it seems like so much more stuff in preparation for Final Night is happening in this book. We got the history of Mongol. We see more of what he's been doing. The scene that I mentioned earlier, and I'm looking at it now, and it's just, like, making me cringe. The Sinestro Corps members that are locked up in the science cells and on Oa start marking their cell windows with the Sinestro Corps sign in their blood. But you see Sinestro pulling back the skin on his finger with his teeth to get the blood out. And,
It's It's not just the skin. I mean, it's meat. Like, he's... I couldn't believe it.
Like a piece of fried chicken. Oh,
oh God. It was... Yeah, it was pretty in your face. But I think it does a good job of showing that Mongol really is a force to be reckoned with. You know, like... We've seen some big events, and that Mongol is, like, a badass. Like, he was great, and he's always been kind of a Green Lantern villain. He was great in The Death of Superman, and then when he came back with, in Geoff Johns' first Green Lantern run. But he can still be kind of cheesy, you know? Like, he's not always all that believable, but this kind of goes through the origin of Mongol and makes you really understand, like, ever since he was a child, like, he's just crazy. And yeah. He has this lust for power. And it was really good, like, examination of the character.
Well, I like that, you know, it's not only heroes that have the legacy thing. Like, this is Mongol's son. And this is, like, not the Mongol from Emerald Twilight. It's not the Mongol from the Alan Moore stories. It's his son. And we see, like, all those events and how they played out and how he had his sister and how he murdered her and how he has become his father. And it was actually, I really enjoyed that little flashback moment. I thought that was really good.
Yeah, the whole splash page with the future and the past, I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, so again, we just can't recommend this book enough. And the bad thing is, like, I think a lot of people just kind of put it aside just because they don't think it matters or it's not relevant. Right. And that's not true at all.
Yeah, if you like Green Lantern, if you are excited about The Blackest Night, like, you really do need to read this book. Because, I mean, while they're having a great examination of, like, Hal Jordan's secret origin and the past, like, this book is, like, crucial to, like, really getting everything with... And it's doing a good job, because you don't need this book to, you know, enjoy Green Lantern or The Blackest Night, but if you want to get, like, the whole experience, you need to buy this book.
Yeah. Okay, next book I want to talk about was David Laffam's Young Liars, issue number 3. I've been reading this, and initially I've been enjoying it quite a bit. It's getting harder and harder for me to enjoy any of the characters in the story, though, because they're all such... There's something... One's a junkie, and, like, actually I feel more... I don't know, I feel more, I guess, just for, like, the junkie cross-dresser, because, like, that character actually feels like there's some damage and there's some pain. The main character, however, we understand, like, he was depressed, and he met this girl, and he's been kind of taking care of her since she was shot in the head, and she's got kind of an impulse control problem, and he's been kind of monitoring that. But in this book, we find out at the end, spoilers, by the way, we find out at the end that he was the one who... It looks like he was the one who shot her. And then if he shot her, and then he wanted to be with her before that, and then she's got this problem, and he kind of forces her to be with him. I was like, oh, that just made this a really kind of ugly story. Or made him just kind of a really ugly character.
That's not good.
All the other characters in the story are really kind of self-serving. All except, basically the only one who's not the self-serving one is the cross-dressing junkie, and like I said, that's the only one you can really feel any kind of good emotion for. But it's an interesting book, and it's definitely an interesting cast of characters, but there's really no one you can really root for, unfortunately. And that's, I think it was okay for the first two issues, but at this point I'm kind of getting a little, like, I'm just getting a little sick of the emo kind of crap going on here.
Yeah.
And, like, I do like the how they set up each issue, because each issue has like a mixtape of songs that you can listen to while reading the story. And I thought, okay, well, that's cool. And, you know, they're kind of like, not the most upbeat songs, but like the beginning of this book starts off with a suicide attempt, and then it goes into just all kinds of stuff. But I don't know. It's just, maybe it's just depressing. Maybe I was just kind of getting depressed as I read it, but I was just really turned off by the ending revelation that if he was the one who put her in this condition and then is taking advantage of it, I was like, "Whoa, that's rough. that's a downward story beat." So I'm probably going to keep buying it just to see how they play that out, but I don't know how long I'd stick with it after that. It's interesting, but it has to move forward in some way, shape, or form soon and get out of the just, like, feel sorry for me emo stuff.
Fair enough. I picked up Gen Next this week, number one. What this is this is written by Chris Claremont, and it was a poll that was up on Marvel.com on what kind of story Chris Claremont should write next for the X-Men. And it basically ended up being, what if the X-Men, I guess, jumped like 30 years in the future, and now the children of the X-Men are the new mutants, they're new cadets. So we have some characters, like we have a kid that is a Oliver, who's the son of Rogue and Gambit, Storm's daughter, Colossus's son, and then a couple other characters who you don't know who their parents are. I don't know how I felt about this. You know, Claremont is probably known as the classic X-Men writer, mm-hmm. and I guess I would probably agree with that. But he came back to X-Men quite a few years ago, and he did some Uncanny, and he did some Extreme X-Men, and it was one of those things where it's like, you can't go home again, you know?
Yeah.
Like, his new stuff was not good. And I was really excited for this idea, because the whole thing about, you know, just throw it into the future, completely out of continuity, you know, it's just like a what-if story. It just seemed, I don't know, it just seemed kind of empty. You know, it doesn't seem like these characters have a very good dynamic between one another. This issue focused mostly on Storm's daughter, who has control of the weather, but there's also some kind of... It's weird, there's some uncontrollable side of her where she turns into an animal, and I guess it's supposed to go with the mystery that you don't know who her father is. At this point, I would assume that her father is the Black Panther, but you don't know. So I don't know. I mean, I'm gonna stick with it. I'm gonna keep reading it, and I hope it gets better. I mean, I love Claremont, and I want Claremont to do some good X-Men stuff, but I'm just not feeling it. And maybe that's like my fault because I'm comparing all this new stuff to the stuff he's done in the past, you know, and you can't really do that. But it just seems a little bit empty.
Okay, it's a miniseries.
I think it's an ongoing. It doesn't say, like, it just says issue one. It doesn't say, like, 1 of 5 or anything. So I would assume it's an ongoing, but at this point, like, I can't really see it lasting.
I'm kind of interested in that, so I might go back and look for that. Last book I want to talk about is Booster Gold number 9. And Geoff Johns is making a whole series out of, like, one issue of Infinite Crisis. It's been amazing.
Yeah.
Because basically this... for the past several issues, it's been dealing with him going back. His whole motivation for doing this whole thing, Booster Gold, was to save his friend Ted Kord from being shot by Maxwell Lord just before Infinite Crisis happened. Well, finally, several issues back, he was able to go do that, and he brought Blue Beetle into the time stream and said, well, you just can't let people know that you're alive because it has to keep things in motion. Well, Booster screws up. The time stream gets disrupted, and basically, due to Blue Beetle never dying, no one ever finds out about Maxwell Lord's OMAC project, and it follows through, and it succeeds, basically. And so, what's happened is... Yeah, it's actually really interesting. What's happened is most of the heroes are dead in this present time, when Maxwell Lord has... He's still got control of Superman. He's got his OMAC army, he's got Brother Eye, and basically, everything in that book that was stopped was in this book progressed to the point where it was all successful. And so in this one, Blue Beetle and Booster Gold are trying to find the old members of the Justice League from Keith Giffen's run. And they were going to reunite and try and take them on. So what we get is we get Fire and Ice and Mr. Miracle, and we get Guy Gardner back when, you know, he really was just arrogant and cocky as hell. Yeah. And it was kind of cool, because we get the interactions between all these characters that we haven't seen in a really, really long time.
Right.
And I just really enjoyed it, because it's just kind of fun to go back and revisit that. But also, they go back to attack... they go in and try and find some other characters, like Martian Manhunter, and we see him plugged into the anti-monitor tower, and we find out what happened to Superboy Prime afterwards, what happened to Alexander Luthor... It's just a really interesting. It's almost like an Elseworlds tale, like a what if, you know, something happened.
Yeah, this sounds like something I really want to go pick up. Yeah, I loved Infinite Crisis, and my favorite part about that was the OMAC miniseries. So that whole dynamic to see like what happened if Maxwell Lord could have got away with that. That sounds really cool.
It has been, and it's unfortunately it's kind of in the middle of an arc right now. But if you go probably back to issue number 5 is when it started, and I'm sure they're still out there on the racks, but it's really, really interesting storyline, and it goes back and revisits that Infinite Crisis territory, which I really enjoyed that storyline, and to see it kind of taken off in this direction, it's been really enjoyable, and the art by...
Phil Jurgens?
Yeah, by Dan Jurgens. It's grown back on me. I think the first couple issues he was just kind of rusty, and he also did Nightwing a little while back, and I think it wasn't really his fit. But he really seems to have hit his stride, and this art is absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, I've always
loved this art. This is the Dan Jurgens that I remember from like Superman in the '90s.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to go pick that up.
It's cool to see Dan Jurgens draw Superman again too, even if it's an evil Superman.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. The last book I wanted to talk about real quick was X-Men Legacy, number 211. You know, this book, I've been unsure about this book, and it seems to maybe be coming around. Like, I guess this book is gonna just focus completely on Xavier, because that's basically the only person who is in this issue. And it's actually... Like, while I don't think there should be a whole X-Men book devoted to this, like, I'd love, like, to see, like, an Xavier book or an Xavier miniseries, this issue was pretty good. The main thing is that we see that Xavier, after coming back after the last issue, he's okay. Like, his body and his mind has healed, but he doesn't have all of his memories. So now he's trying to track people down and find out things about his past. And he tracks down his old friend Carter, who, of course, is kind of a supervillain, and he's trying to figure out all the stuff about his past because Carter's father was friends with Xavier's father. And a big thing that we learned is that Sinister had a hand in Xavier's upbringing.
Really?
So yeah, we see this point where Sinister is testing Carter and Xavier, and he's giving them shots, and apparently this is something that was kind of routine for them. And you see Xavier's experiencing this through Carter's memories. And so you see Sinister in disguise, but he has the red diamond on his forehead is showing up. And so Xavier's kind of talking about, like, he's talking to Carter, he's like, "Who was that? That looked like someone who was familiar to me." And Carter's like, "Yeah, that diamond was always showing, but I was the only one who could ever see it." So I thought that was really cool, because Carter's powers have to do with something with energy, and so he always kind of saw through that facade. So being a big fan of Sinister, I'm obviously pretty thrilled about that. I think that's a pretty cool dynamic. At the very end, someone is going to assassinate Xavier, and we see that Gambit is there to save him. So I thought that was extremely random. I mean, we haven't really seen Gambit in the X-Men books for years. He was there during the Messiah Complex, kind of working with Mystique, but I'm not sure exactly why he would be protecting Xavier or what his angle is, but this is the very first issue of X-Men Legacy that I can completely say that I liked and that I'm interested in, and I hope that this keeps on going forward. I'm not sure what's going to happen, but this was actually pretty damn good.
Okay, well, first of all, I wanted to talk about a book that David and I, we talked about, we bought each other books to read after the Emerald City Comic Con, and David got me Young Avengers Volume 1 by Alan Heinberg and Jim Chung, and I have finished it. I really enjoyed this book.
Good book.
It was probably a solid B+.
B+?
That's
an A, easily.
Well, okay, let me just... The artwork was fantastic. I have no problems with Jim Chung. I love his artwork. the story was good, and I enjoyed how the sidekicks came together. I enjoyed the reason for the sidekicks to come together. I just found a few parts of the story a little too convenient. Okay. Like, it seemed like things just kind of happened to... They kind of fell in place every once in a while, just really easily. Or characters were just there all of a sudden. The other thing is the young Kang, who I like. Like, I thought that was a really cool character. I just, like... If he's going to be Kang the Conqueror and going to be an asshole, odds are he grew up an asshole. Or at least he was one at that point, by that point in his life, by his high school years. Like, he'd probably be a little bit emotional scarred then, other than completely the opposite of how he was going to be. Like, I've never
seen... No, but they explain that. They explain that he was basically this fragile child, and then when he built that time machine, he goes back in the time, and then he all of a sudden got this surge of power, and then that's what triggered it.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I just didn't buy it. Like,
No, that makes perfect sense, because, like, he has so many issues, and he's so insecure, and then all of a sudden he gets to this point where he's in the past, he has all this power, and then all of a sudden these people are treating him like a god. I mean, he's got some complex issues already, and that's going to kick something up.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I understand the concept of, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely, but I don't know. It was still good, don't get me wrong. I thought it was kind of heartbreaking, the decision they had to make at the end, as far as, do you send him back to set the time stream right, or, you know, or can he stay and not become that character? Because he so desperately wants to change that future for himself. Mm-hmm. But, you know, through the course of the book, you understand that it can't happen. History has to follow through on a certain course. And I thought, well, that's an interesting choice to make, and I like that they made that. It was really good, really enjoyable. I liked the diversity amongst the group too. I thought there was a great mix of, like, you know, girls and guys, and I like how a couple of the characters were gay. I like how I like Patriot's character a lot, and how he was very angry about Captain America kind of getting the credit for his grandfather. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really well handled. I like Jessica Jones in this book. All the characters seem dead on, and I really enjoyed the characterizations.
Yeah, the next volume is good. You find out some interesting things about the Patriot and his powers, and you find out it ends focusing a lot more on the Vision and Hulkling and Asgardian, Warlock now.
Yeah,
it's a good read.
It was, and what it reminded me of was Jeff Jones' Teen Titans arc. Because
it's very good.
I mean, the title of the trade is Sidekicks, and that's what it feels like. It feels like the teen sidekicks getting together, and it feels like a really well-told story like that. Because a lot of times, you know, look at the current Titans books, you can get those characters together, and if not for a good writer, those stories can just be boring as hell, or fall flat on their face. I think this was a really good kind of rally the team type of book. Everyone meeting each other for the first time, you know, those awkward introductions that are always so good. And, you know, some of them are angry, some of them are frustrated, some of them have a big chip on their shoulder, which I like. I think that's perfectly normal for a sidekick type of character. So, especially someone in the shadow of, you know, their mentor, or not even really their mentors, but the people they're emulating. So, I enjoyed it. It was very, very good.
Good. I'm glad you enjoyed it, Eric.
I'm going to buy the next volume.
Okay. Next week, I will be discussing the trade that Eric bought for me, which was Batman Face to Face. And I'm almost done. So, there's a lot of cartoons out there, and one of our listeners, Tim, from Florida, he emailed us asking if we saw the new trailer for The Wolverine and the X-Men cartoon that's coming out. I think is it going to be on WB? CW?
I'm not sure.
Maybe Nickelodeon, something like that. But Eric, you saw the trailer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what did you think?
I thought it looked good. I really like the art style. It follows Astonishing a lot. And what it reminds me of is how the X-Men cartoon of the 90s was animated very much like the book. Mm-hmm. I thought, at least back then. This seems to follow the style of the Astonishing book now, and I really like the look of the characters. The roster looks good, like, you know, Emma Frost is in it and stuff like that, which I was really excited to see. I thought, like, that's pretty cool. The only issue that I have with it so far, and really I can't say anything really bad about it because I haven't seen a full episode yet, but I understand the need commercially for putting Wolverine out in front of the team and putting Wolverine and the X-Men in the title. But Wolverine's just not a leader. Like, he's his own man. He's not the one who rallies the team and gets going. At least I don't feel like he is. That's not how I know the character. So, and to see him ordering around Cyclops, I was just like, it just doesn't feel right. And that could just be my own personal bias because I've never seen that before. But what I like in X-Men Evolutions, how he was kind of he was older than everyone and he was kind of an outsider of the team.
Right.
That's how I felt Wolverine should be. Mm-hmm. And so tell me if I'm right or wrong.
I would have to pretty much agree with everything that you just said. I saw the trailer, and the first thing I can say is that I wasn't sure if it was going to be like some kind of limited series or a movie, because the trailer was really good. Like, it seems like there's going to be a lot of content, a lot of big stories. We see Magneto's in it, and Xavier, and it looks really good. It looks very intense, very story-driven. Like you said, the cast looks pretty well-rounded. The straight-up Astonishing cast is there. Like, Kitty Pryde, Beast, Cyclops, Wolverine, White Queen. I mean, it is the Astonishing cast. So I was kind of shocked by that, but it was really cool to see. It seems like the art style is the same guy as you did X-Men Evolution, because it's very light. The colors are, like Eric said, the colors are a lot lighter. The tone is kind of like the Astonishing X-Men. It looks really, really good. Like,
it's very clean. It's a very clean look.
Yeah, it looks great. I was extremely, extremely put off by the Wolverine and the X-Men thing. Like, I mean, just kind of like Eric said, like, there is a commercial aspect to it, but honestly, I don't even think that commercial aspect is even there anymore, because you had three huge X-Men movies, we've had X-Men cartoons before, so you don't really need a Wolverine to get people, you know, to watch it, you know what I mean? Like, X-Men is, they're popular enough without Wolverine.
Well, I think even just if you had just X-Men, people know Wolverine comes with the X-Men.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And yeah, Wolverine is not a leader. Like, Wolverine and X-Force, like, that makes sense. Wolverine can stand up and lead. He can lead squads, he can lead teams, but he's not a leader. Like, you cannot have Wolverine and Scott Summers on the same team and Wolverine leading. It doesn't fit, and I don't, you know, one of my, I've always talked about how Scott Summers is my favorite X-Men. The thing I hated about X3 was, and the X-Men movies in general, basically, was, like, how Scott was treated. And I don't want to see Scott Summers portrayed that way in this show. And that's what I'm kind of worried about. So, I don't know. I mean, they try to kind of explain it because apparently there's this bad future and Xavier comes back and he says that Logan is the key to leading them away from this future. And it seems really forced. Because, I mean, basically they're just saying, we're going to change everything and make Wolverine the leader. But we have to, like, explain why. And there really doesn't need to be, there shouldn't be an explanation because it shouldn't happen. But that being said, it's just a trailer. It does look amazing. I'm definitely going to check it out. And we'll, I hope everyone else does too.
Yeah, we'll talk about it again after it airs and we have a more well-rounded view of the show. These are just kind of preliminary thoughts just from the, you know, few minutes of trailer.
But it looks great. Especially, I mean, the art looks amazing.
It's probably the best animated looking X-Men that I've seen ever.
Mm-hmm, probably, yeah, I would agree with that right now.
Going back to some more books that I wanted to talk about that I picked up at the Emerald City Comic Con, these are very well known, and I bought the first volume of Scott Pilgrim at the show. Brian Lee O'Malley was there to sign the books, and I picked the first one up because they were all like half off, and the guy said, "Oh, you're gonna want to buy all of them." I was like, "Ah, yeah, you know, don't tell me what I want to buy. You know, You know, but you don't know what I like.
Don't tell me my business.
Exactly. It was very much like that. You know, I was like, well, you know, I'll read it and then make my decision. Shit. Because I could have gotten every other volume half off when I had to go to the store last night and buy the other three. Because I read it and I was hooked. It's awesome. It's so much fun, and it's indie enough to where you think like it's kind of semi-normal people. It's cartoony, but it's done in kind of like, you know, they're just it's a kid, or not a kid, but a 20-some-year-old guy and him and his friends in Canada, and like it's all kind of normal up until the point where it's structured very much like a video game, and to date this one girl, or to get the girl, basically he has to fight her 7 evil ex-boyfriends, and they're all set up as like bosses in a video game. And it's just really wacky setup, and like, so for like 10 pages, it goes into like crazy superhero-y video game comic, and it's back to being like a normal kind of average everyday Joe comic, and it's like, well, like, he has to get a job or something like that, and it's really kind of an interesting mix. And I really enjoyed his interactions with just how, you know, trying to get a girlfriend, or what do you do when you have a girlfriend and, you know, you find someone else who you have a crush on. It was just very, very interesting, and enjoyable. Like, it's very innocent, and it's a lot of fun. And there's just a lot of little stuff that makes me laugh. Again, going back to the video game content, he's a big Final Fantasy fan, so, you know, he's in a band, and he's like, hey, I figured out the bass line to Final Fantasy 2. Or he'll be walking around, and he'll see this weird little thing, and he's like, what is that? And one of his friends will go, it's a save point. It's a save point! And he, like... It's just this little, like, it's a little wink to the readers, and
this book sounds like it is extremely up my alley right now.
I think you'd really like it. It's a lot of fun.
I'm gonna go pick it up tomorrow, definitely.
There was one where he finds a 1-up, and it disappears, and he gets items, too, which was a lot of fun. And he has these dreams, and one dream he's walking around a forest with a sword and shield, and he's walking around with this little elf character, and his girlfriend shows up in the dream, and the elf's like, random encounter! For like some reason that made me laugh.
So, oh, this sounds so good right now. This sounds great.
It is. And the thing
and they're
is
making a movie with Michael Cera, right?
Yeah. And so yeah, I mean it's really interesting. Like it does start off just kind of normal, and then it goes into these weird little tangents, but it's so much fun, and it's just it's a really quick read. They're digest sized books, but yet you can read through them like read through one in like an hour and a half or 2 hours. They go really fast. Yep. And I can't say enough good things about it now. I'm at the beginning of the fourth book, which I believe is the latest one out. And there was a great little Sonic the Hedgehog intro to it, and it's just a lot of fun, and a lot of winks to video gamers and things like that. So if you haven't read it yet, apparently like I was one of the last people to find out about this, but if you haven't read it
yet... Yeah, I've always heard about it, but I've never checked it out.
Exactly. The same thing with me, too. And so I finally just took the plunge. So if you haven't checked it out, I strongly recommend just picking up the first volume. It's very easy to get into. And, yeah, a lot of fun.
Nice.
Last thing we want to talk about is... we've talked about it before on the show, the Star Wars Legacy of the Force series of novels that have been coming out. And the last book in the series came out last week, I believe. And uh-huh. David and I had both finished it, and we wanted to give our recommendation and tell you guys our thoughts on the book.
Yeah. I guess I'll go first. This is, Eric, you've been reading the extended universe stuff for a while. This was my first series reading it, and so I think there's a stigma of reading the Star Wars extended universe books. Like, they're not going to have the same, I don't know, the same, it's kind of like the image or the same feeling that you would get from the actual movies, and then also it's kind of daunting because it's kind of, you're jumping in and there's so much, like there's so much information and so much backstory that it can be, you can hesitate a little bit, but I can say, like, this being my first series, this was amazing. Like, you know, Eric and I constantly talk about how big of fans we are of Star Wars, and kind of how sad it is that, you know, for right now, Star Wars isn't continuing. Like, we have the Clone Wars coming up, which is great, but, you know, the experience of having the movies growing up and and having that be a part of your life is like, it's always a very fond memory. And with these books, the character examinations and how the characters are portrayed are spot on. Like, the old school characters and the new school characters. This story ended up following mostly Jason Solo, who is the son of Han and Leia. And I was just amazed by all the stuff that I read, all the stuff that I learned. I actually went back and I'm reading more books now to pick up stuff. And it's very much like being a kid and reading comic books, because, you know, when you're reading comic books, you didn't have the whole story right there. Like, sometimes you had to go back, get some back issues, you had to do some searching, get some history, and that's what I'm doing, and, like, it's amazing, you know? Like, yeah, I mean, how is this for you? Because you've read all these books already, and, like, for this last series, this had to be a big deal.
Yeah, like you said, I've been reading the Extended Universe for a while, and what's interesting is they've let the characters age to kind of their natural progression. You know, all Han, Leia, and Luke are all in their 50s, 60s, or by now 60s and 70s, and the books mainly revolve around the New Jedi Order that Lucas set up, the stability of the Galactic Alliance, and the children of all the main characters. So it's about the next generation. So if you are into that legacy aspect of it, that's exactly what Star Wars Universe has gone. And like David said, the character examinations are incredible. Just the amount of detail, you really do start feeling for these characters at certain twists in the storyline. And they tread over what you might feel familiar ground, but they do it in a fresh and exciting way, and yet they aren't afraid to make big choices. You know, sometimes you go into an extended novel or something like that feeling like there's no peril for the main characters, when in any of these books, there's actually a pretty high body count.
Well, yeah, I mean, in this was a 9-book series, and there was a lot of development from some simple characters, especially Luke Skywalker's son, Ben. But there were a lot of characters that were around in book one that weren't around in book 9.
It's very interesting to see how, you know, certain parts of the history of the galaxy repeat themselves, how it also goes back, this series especially goes back and examines the original trilogy about how, you know, what did the rebels feel, you know, about killing Imperial soldiers who weren't necessarily bad, but, you know, right, fighting a war. And there's a lot of gray area that's explored in depth in these books. And I just really want to recommend these books. If people have been kind of on the verge or picked something up and thought, well, maybe, but then thought it's too hard to get into, you've heard from David that, you know, he started with this series of books and was able to easily get into them. They're a lot of fun, and I hope people can go out and enjoy them.
The first one is online right now for free, right?
That's true. Betrayal, which is the first book in the Legacy series, is available as an ebook, I believe, on StarWars.com. Or, you know, Star Wars or Amazon. It's out there if you just search for it online. But it's called Betrayal. Yeah.
Yep. So definitely, just if you are a Star Wars fan, if you ever had, like Eric said, any kind of itch to ever try the books, just try this one, Betrayal. Search for it online. It's amazing. Like, it was really, there were so many twists and turns, so many up and downs, so many just truly emotional, heart-wrenching moments, and then the cavalry and the jump in the air, pumping your fist moments. It was a great ride.
Yeah. All right, well, that does it for us this week. If you have any questions or comments about the show, you can email us at contact@fanboystrikeback.com, or you can go to our website at www.fanboystrikeback.com, and that is hopefully, you know, where we post our written reviews of the book of the week each week. And also we post things there like the new Star Wars trailer, Batman trailers, a lot of movie trailers, movie posters, movie news, general kind of comic booky superhero news, stuff we think you guys might find interesting. Also, there's a link to our forums page there, and that's where we've started topics to discuss with you guys. a few other people have gone on there and started topics, and it's really nice to get to know you guys and talk to you about things that we just don't discuss on the show. So if you have questions, or if you want to talk about things that we don't address on here, that's the perfect place to do it. So as far as finding us, you can find us on iTunes.
Yes, iTunes, Podcast Alley, pretty much any podcatcher out there. You can download the podcast directly from our site, fanboystrikeback.com. If you do download or use iTunes, please leave us a review if you like the show. That really helps us out. It makes us look good, and other people can search for us easier. And like Eric said, come by the forums, post. It's great to see you guys on there. It's great to hear from you, find out more about what you like, what you think, and that's kind of what this is all about. So I think that does it for this week. I am David.
I'm Eric.
See you guys next week. Come to paradise.